All right, guys, welcome once again to your High Gravity Male podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and today I have a very special guest. And before I introduce him, I just want to say this. I mean, this is a gentleman. I'm not really an enigma on purpose, but I typically do keep things close to the vest just because, you know, most people's advice really isn't that good when it comes to it. But this gentleman probably knows more about me than almost anybody I know other than maybe my family. So I just wanted to put that out there because this is a person I trust with some of my deepest, darkest secrets. And another reason, he actually understands human desire better than almost everybody I know. And so with that, we're going to be talking about understanding female desire and things like that. So with that being said, I want to introduce my friend Christian Hudson. So Christian, appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you for the very flattering introduction. And it's going to be fun to talk about desire today. And we'll try to keep your deep, dark secrets out of the conversation.
Yeah, don't tell those. It might scare everybody away. No, they're not that bad. So anyway, let's talk about, just jump right into it. What are some of the mistakes guys make in just understanding female desire, maybe what their girlfriend or wife is really thinking or really wanting, you know, from her man?
Right. Well, let's see. It all starts with taking a guy's perspective, right? And this one's pretty obvious. If, you know, as men, we have certain things that we think are interesting and flattering and compelling. And you know, so sometimes we'll transplant, you know, what we think are our desires onto women. And, you know, we think to ourselves, you know, if I was better looking, for example, or if I, you know, had more money or those sorts of things, things that are sort of materialistic, you know, and where there are things that we think, you know, women would like them. So, you know, notwithstanding, you know, what you often teach about, you know, bodybuilding and fitness, listen, that stuff is fantastic. It is absolutely, you know, absolutely worth spending your time on. You and I both know that, you know, we both spend about 5 days a week at the gym.
Right.
You know, at the same time, you see these guys who they kind of go overboard and, you know, maybe they get roided out or anything like that. And, you know, I've talked to some of these guys and they're like, yeah, you know, like I'm all jacked and like girls think I'm hot and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, so it's one of these things where we're putting our own, we're kind of creating this idea of what women want in our heads and going totally overboard and trying to be that.
Right.
Certainly, there are also, I mean, so many mixed messages from what I'll broadly call, you know, the media and the rest of the world. You know, one of them is, you know, that obviously we have to have a lot of money. And again, money's not going to help, or I'm sorry, it's not going to hurt, but it's not going to be something that, you know, the women absolutely need. Another one is nice cars. I learned firsthand that has very little to do with whether a girl will sleep with you. I used to, you know, race Audis and BMWs, and I thought I was really cool, but, you know, during that time in my life, I probably hooked up with fewer girls than at any other time.
And probably all the wrong ones, too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think there were any, so I can't say if they were wrong or right. But yeah, you know, literally it was like one or two over the course of like 2 years. It was pretty bad. So that's definitely an issue. You know, where you can start to look for, you know, where you can start to look for, you know, cues about, you know, female desire, is in some really interesting places. So one of those places is, you know, you look at, well, what are women addicted to? Like, what are they absolutely crazy about? Well, they love romantic comedies in general. I mean, I'm making generalizations here, but most women love romantic comedies. Beyond that, women love romance novels and literotica. In fact, literotica is it's a genre of fiction. It's kind of like a romance novel, but it's a little more sexual in nature. Everybody's heard of 50 Shades of Grey at this point. And, you know, so, you know, you look at that stuff, it's like, man, that is the number one category of ebooks on Amazon. And women love the privacy of being able to download these things right into their, you know, Kindles and you know, not have to go to the store and be embarrassed about buying something with Fabio on the cover. So.
Right.
So that's where we can start to get some clues about what women really want. Is not, you know, I like to think of it this way. you know, actions speak louder than words. And women will tell you, oh, I want a funny guy, I want a rich guy, I want a wealthy guy, whatever. And sometimes they even believe that themselves, or they consciously try to believe that because those are socially acceptable things. But, you know, those are their words. What are their actions? Well, you know, they're in private, they're sitting there, they're reading literatica novels, they're watching romance movies, romantic comedies. And, you know, that to me is a very good breadcrumb to, you know, to look at on this trail of you know, where are we led with female desire.
Yeah, yeah, sounds awesome. I mean, that's, it's really strange. I'm pretty sure you read this, the same book that I did with the guys actually did. They had comparable studies trying to figure out what websites guys were most going to and what they were searching for in search engines. And for guys, like, the top five things were all about porn for the most part. And for women, it was, you know, things like literatica or, you know, these types of sites that they were going to. And, you know, for a guy, it's like, all right, well, this is obviously, if you're a guy, you understand porn and you understand the visual aspect of it and those type of things like that. But when you flip that over and you understand that what these ladies are looking at, it's not visual at all. I mean, in fact, it's more imaginative than anything. And that's to put it crassly, that's like chick porn almost.
It's amazing to me that in 2008, you had about the same, and, you know, that's the most recent year for which data is available. I'm sure they'll, you know, more data will be coming online soon. But for 2008, about the same number of women purchased like literatica and romance novels as there were men who subscribed to pornography websites.
Right.
We all have, you know, sexual desire, men and women both. And the question is just, you know, how do we fulfill it? And, you know, and as you pointed out, very rightly, you know, men are very visual. It's interesting. We kind of have, and here I'm summarizing some data from that book, which is called A Billion Wicked Thoughts. But men have, you know, a sort of trigger mechanism where if any one trigger exists, we can be good to go. You know, if a woman has a pretty face or pretty breasts or a great ass or great legs, that can be enough to, you know, get our rocket ignited, so to speak, and, you know, and be a compelling enough reason, especially if there's a drink or two involved.
Yeah.
Pursue her sexually. Women, on the other hand, operate with more of a and mechanism, where if men are like an or, like X or Y or Z are in place, women operate on an and mechanism. X and Y and Z have to be in place. You know, there's plenty of theories behind why this might be the case. The most prominent theory being that childbirth is costly in a genetic perspective, you know, and in a behavioral perspective. It takes a lot of time, and the woman is saddled with the burden of the child. So she has to have higher barriers to, you know, to allowing men into her inner realm, so to speak. But all the same, I mean, women are very, very sexual. I think we're all evolved enough at this point, in 2012, as we talk about this, to admit that women are just as sexual, if not often more so than men. So, you know, the question is, what are the things that trigger her sexual desire? And that's where we get back to this and mechanism, where a number of things have to be in place. Now, you know, I've been in this whole dating advice and pickup community, in and out of it and around it, for many years. And I've seen a lot of guys try a lot of different approaches. I mean, I think there's this notion that you know, there's a magic bullet that you can kind of go up and you say it and it makes girls' panties drop and it's all good. And, you know, that may be the case for some girls, but what I found personally was that for many of the women who I dated, which, you know, you've met a lot of them, they're very high quality girls, they're beautiful. That's just not enough. You know, really beautiful women are not deceived by a line or by a guy buying them alcohol, or, I mean, even by money. I've had girlfriends who, you know, people offered to fly them on jets to private islands, and you know, one of my ex-girlfriends, like, you know, a date she had was you know, in a penthouse suite at the Trump Tower. And, you know, so they see these things, And I think for a guy, you know, if you take the extreme example of what a guy thinks female desire is going to fall for, you know, that is it, right? You know, you're a guy, you're like, okay, I'm going to make my money. I'm going to get my Trump Tower penthouse and I'm going to invite girls over and, you know, watch their panties drop. It kind of makes sense for us, right? It's like, I would, geez, if a girl did that to me, I would totally fuck her. But to a woman, you know, it's like, especially quality women, they're not deceived by that sort of thing. They're like, you know, I need more. Like they work on that and mechanism. And unless they're, you know, a total gold digger, which, hey, listen, there is going to be about 20% of the population, 30% that is that way. And that's going to be enough. But that's certainly not all women. And so there's more to her desire, that is not solved by what I would call a single magic bullet or a single thing you can do. And so I began to look at this in a more systemic way of like, okay, look, I'm not going to try to sleep with the girl on the first date. Like that will work for some, but it doesn't work for all. Some girls eat it, in fact, and I figured out a way to determine that, but I'm not going to like put my agenda on her. I'm going to figure out what her agenda is and what her sort of needs are and desires are. And I'm going to try to build a system around that where, you know, where I can bring her into, you know, what I want to do, which is, you know, have sex with her or have her be my girlfriend, according to how she wants it to happen. And according to this, this core part of female desire, which requires X and Y and Z to be in place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I've often said in the past, you know, I'll get comments about guys will say, you know, well, I'm working out and you know this is happening. I'm getting to my perfect AI and you know things are changing a little bit, but it's not. I mean, I'm getting some good initial interest, but then it kind of stalls off. It's not the magic bullet. And, you know, a lot of guys teach, you know, looks don't matter and those things like that, which is, you know, we've talked about that. It's not that they don't matter. It's just that they're not necessary is one of the things. And so the reason I say that, because you're talking about this and mechanism, basically what it seems to be is that they're like little Lego blocks of things that you have at your disposal. And each one of these things marks some type of attraction or desire that a woman may have. And you can stack them up however you need to stack them up to reach this certain threshold. And once you get over that threshold, it works. Looks, if you don't have looks, then you have other things you can stack in your favor. Looks can work for you. It can work against you as well. But it runs right into what you're saying about it's this and this and this and this. But it doesn't have to be necessarily this or this, but just kind of the way everything's put together as a collective right. tends to work.
And you know what's really interesting, Brad, is, you know, it sounds, I think for anybody listening right now, they might think, oh, geez, it sounds, you know, confusing. Like, well, yeah. What are all these things that I have to pull together? You know, one girl I have to paint water art, water paintings and watercolor paintings and, you know, this other girl, I need to make her smoothies and, you know, what, and the answer to that is no. It's not quite that complex. You know, the things that you basically have to demonstrate, you know, I found, are pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And almost every girl I don't want to say fall for them because it sounds like, you know, they have no choice in the matter. But, you know, honestly, if you kind of step through the right, you know, gates, I just found that here's what I did. I mean, I just rather than talking around the point, you know, I sat down, I analyzed, you know, hundreds of these romance and literatica novels. And I was like, what are the things that are happening that are causing women to fall for these guys?
Right.
And, you know, what I learned is there were certain behavioral characteristics that the men had. And it wasn't necessarily that they were alphas. I mean, there are some betas in these books that, you know, score, so to speak, just as often as the alphas do.
Sure.
You know, so it's not where you have to be this, like, you know, ripping Fabio-esque, you know, alpha male. That's not that, again, like we said, that's a part of what female desire could be, but that's not a necessary condition for it. But, you know, taking that from the theoretical to the practical, I mean, I realize that there's sort of four phases that a woman goes through, and I can walk you through those real briefly. I mean, the first is what I call impression. So, you know, you meet her and she gets an impression of you. And, you know, a lot of guys who are, these silly pickup artist guys, they spend so much time on this impression phase. They, like, go out to bars and they're constantly just thinking, like, I need to, like, make such a good impression the first time I meet her that, like, she'll want to sleep with me. And they're just always trying to push stuff really far. And, you know, listen, I went out in New York. I've had my fun party time. But I just found that when it came to actually dating and having relationships and you know, not bringing home bar sluts who I met at 1:30.
the dumpsters.
Right? The were still around at witching hour.
Yeah.
You know, when it came to moving beyond those girls and actually meeting quality girls, impression was a lot easier than I thought it was. Because, you know, if your goal is, you know, hey, I'm going to go out tonight and get laid, you know, the whole all four phases two of the phases, which we'll get to the later ones in just a minute, you know, it becomes necessary to run through all of them in a very short, condensed period of time. And besides the fact that I would call, whether you call it a skill set or you know, a style of behavior or what have you, it's just not something that suits me, and it's not something it's something that I don't think suits a lot of guys.
Right.
So that impression phase, it's actually something that happens very quickly. I mean, you can get a number in a minute and a half if you just are doing a few really simple things right. And in fact, you know, I kind of figured out a way to set it up so that women would approach me. And, you know, I know everybody says that, but it's pretty easy if you know a little bit of, like, what I'll call social engineering, you know, where you can, you know, basically what you do, you walk into a room and you talk to a few different people, you establish yourself in this sort of way, and women sort of, you know, look at you and become curious about you because you've established yourself as, you know, as this person who they should know. And it's very easy to do this.
So
you make positive impression, you create intrigue and interest in her, you know, oftentimes they'll come over and approach. If not, they'll be at the very least giving you eye contact and, you know, so you make that impression, right? And the first impression, you know, you can literally walk away with a number in a minute and a half to 3 minutes and have it be a very solid number. And guys don't realize this. They put so much time into, like, I got to have, like, these long ass conversations and, you know, make out with her before you don't have to do that.
Sure.
So that's phase one. Phase two is what I call inspection. And, you know, this is when she's kind of inspecting you. And what's great is when you're able to flip it around and make it feel like you're inspecting her. And I'll give you a very clear example of how this plays out. But, you know, the key point is this is the dating phase. This is like dates one through three or five or 20, or basically it's between when you get her number and when you sleep with her. You know, because she's basically inspecting you enough to figure out, do I to sleep with this guy? Do I want to give myself to him? Is he, you know, as the old Seinfeld cliche goes, is he sponge worthy?
There you go.
So I'll give an example of how you might, like, flip this phase around, because most guys in this phase, you know, they get nervous. They think, oh, I need to impress the girl. And, you know, yeah, you need to put your best foot forward. You can't be a lazy bum, show up 45 minutes late and, you know, not wash your hair. But here's how you would, just one little example of how you, and it's giving her a kiss at the end of the first date. Mm-hmm. So most guys, you know, and I certainly used to do this too, like at the end of the first date, if it went even semi-well, I would try to go for a kiss on the lips. And my feeling was I need to escalate, you know, as far as I can, as quickly as I can, you know, to kind of lock in and, you know, and kind of, you know, and I wanted that kiss, obviously. I mean, if you haven't been dating much, it's like a kiss feels good.
Yeah.
So the problem is that women expect this. Women expect that you're going to go for that kiss. And when you do, they can do one of two things. They can either kiss you back, which, you know, it's fine. But you've done that. It immediately tells them, okay, this guy likes me like that. You know, he wants to take things further. And it gives them control at that point.
Plus it's predictable.
Yeah. Exactly. It's totally predictable. Or they can, if they want to give you a hard time or if they're not really feeling it, they can, you know, give you the cheek. I know that's happened to all of us where, you know, you go for the kiss on the lips, they give you the cheek and you're like, damn,
yeah.
what just happened there? So, you know, what I started to do is I'll go for the kiss, right? And I'll lean in and I'll go straight for her cheek. And then as I'm pulling away, I'll get pretty close to her eyes, you know, because our faces are right next to each other. And as I'm I'll get pretty close to her eyes. And, you know, think that obviously, you know, half of you guys who are listening to this haven't ever seen my face. So I'll give you a real easy one to think about. Think like Tom Cruise in Top Gun. You know, he's got this real, whenever he looks at Kelly McGillis, he's like got this real wry smile, you know, and this look in her, and this look in his eyes that kind of says like, I know a secret that you want to know, and it's going to be really fun getting it out of me. So, you know, you kind of pull away, and you give her this look in the eyes, and you're like, man, like, I had a really great time with you tonight. We might just have to do this again sometime. And so by doing this, you know, what it really short circuits, like, everything that's going through her head, because, again, it's very unpredictable, and it's like, whoa, this guy didn't go for the kiss, but he got real close, and we had kind of this sexually charged moment. But he didn't tell me whether we were going to hang out again.
Right.
He said we might have to, you know, hang out again sometime. So it totally flips this inspection phase around. And there's a few things, you know, that I teach to do in this phase. That's just one of them. But, you know, what happens now is she leaves that date and she's thinking about this guy for the next day, 2 days. Like, okay, what's he thinking? Is he into me? Is he not into me? You know, and then when you send her a text or give her a call again, it's like, it just feels so good for her. You know, she's like, oh, like there he is, he's back. So, so that's inspection. And, you know, you go through that. Usually, you know, unless she's like extremely religious or something, usually you end up having sex on the third or fourth date. You know, I've got, you know, what I call the sex date. And from there, a lot of guys fuck it up too, because they're like, okay, we had sex and, so now we're good. And we're in there, and you know, so say they really pour on the emotion. And hey, listen, women do this too. Some women, like I'm sure you've experienced this, Brad, you know, where you sleep with a girl and you know, and maybe she throws herself at you because she feels like she's got this idea, you know, all men want sex, and if I give it to him, that'll make him commit to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you just feel like overwhelmed with her. You're like, oh man, like she's just, you know, we had sex, now she won't leave me alone,
right?
You don't want to be the guy version of that. So the third phase is what I call intimacy, and it's where you're transitioning from, you know, a sexual friendship into a real relationship. And you know, there's, again, I'm sure I'm not the only one, you know, who's listening to this or who's on this, who's fucked up this phase a number of times, because it's like, you know, you can, you know, some guys are just way too much. Other guys are way too cool. I'm amazed at how many guys I see who, like, they get to that point and then they keep playing the game. They, like, keep playing the same game they've been playing up to that point, and it just really pisses women off, and it doesn't, it's not how she wants to be seduced. Once she's given herself to a man, you know, this part of her story, this thing in her mind says, okay, like now I want things to become more intimate. Yeah. So,
well, let me ask you a question on that. So do you think that a lot of guys that they're playing it too cool at this phase, do you think it's just because, you know, they're playing, they like kind of trying to play the game, or is it they just don't have the balls to let the girl know that, hey, all I'm interested in is a sexual relationship. I'm not interested in taking it to the next level. Because I find that a lot of guys are like that they don't want to mess it up, and so they don't want to like call that out and say, look, you know, I'm just in this for the fun. And not saying that's a bad thing, because it most certainly is not. You know, if you own it, and I've quite frankly I've known a number of women that are fine with that as long as they know.
Right. Well, I think the coolness that I see, and we're probably talking about two different goals here, because, you know, the guys who I'm talking about, usually they do want girlfriends. And okay, like, see, like here's what happens is guys will send me text transcriptions of, you know, of their interactions. And we've got this like private message board where guys actually post their text transcriptions. And you wouldn't believe how many of them are from guys who like they slept with a girl and then like things got cool. And they're like, I really liked this girl and I want to make her my girlfriend. And like, you know, I totally fucked it up.
Right.
And, yeah. So, you know, it's like that's the sort of guy I'm talking about. I mean, listen, if a guy wants to have a you know, casual sexual relationship, there's absolutely an easy way to go with, you know, that. And you just kind of have to set your boundaries and be honest. It's like you can have that conversation earlier, you can have it later, but you got to have it at some point. really is better. But no, I mean, I'm talking about the guy who, you know, you're dating a girl and you really like her and you want her to be your girlfriend, or, you know, you want a real relationship with her. And I see so many guys who just, they keep playing the same game because, you know, it's that old saying, you know, well, it's what got me here, so it must be working.
Right.
But it's not. And, you know, and again, you got to transition. And then the fourth phase is what I call in love. You know, you're in a relationship and you're in love with the girl and she's in love with you. And that's, you know, that's a whole nother point. But these four phases, what I call, you know, impression, inspection, intimacy, and love, you know, they very closely mirror what, you know, what happens every single time, you know, in these romance and literotica novels. And there are just certain sort of psychological buttons you've got to press to activate her and switch. You know, you have to, like, I'll give you a really easy example. You have to turn her on and you have to be safe.
Right.
You know, how do you do that? Like, because a lot of guys, you know, when they think about turning a girl on, like, you know, maybe it sounds sleazy, you know, like you do some stuff that, like, if you did it in a vacuum, you'd be like, oh man, like that sounds sleazy. But it's not if you balance it out with, you know, making her feel safe and being a, you know, a good dude. So, you know, that's where all this stuff is really important. I just figured out this whole sort of system for following what was going on in these books, and, you know, going through these four phases with the girl, and it just kept working and working and working. So, you know, it's like, I don't know, it was very interesting for me just how, you know, despite the fact that many women are different in many ways, you know, the phases remain the same, and it's just a matter of, you know, of kind of when are you taking through those phases. And it's pretty obvious. Like, you know, again, I've got a great tip for figuring out when a girl wants to have sex. Mm-hmm. You know, some girls want on the first date, some girls want on the third. I mean, I had one girl I dated who, we waited about 2 months, and, you know, it was fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty, I think the whole thing is interesting. I'm going to pause right there and, you know, just get questions or reflections on any of that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess one of the things that we should probably clarify a little bit and talk about is the fact that, you know, what women want in the bedroom is often completely different than what they want in real life. Like, as far as just every normal interaction. So, you know, in the bedroom, you can, as long as she feels safe and not judged or anything like that, I mean, you can get away with a lot and have a lot of fun and just and be crazy. And I mean, sometimes, I mean, it depends on the girl. You could call her a slut, you could do all this stuff and she digs it, but you can't do that in public. I mean, and so there's like a total, there's like a boundary there, kind of a thing. And
girls have a sexual personality.
Sure.
Some girls are, it's very loving and it's very soft, and other girls is pretty wild and pretty crazy. And just like anything else, you know, it's like when two personalities come together, you've got yours and she's got hers. And, you know, whether the sex is good or not is going to have a lot to do with, you know, never mind the fact that, you know, hopefully you have an orgasm and she does too. But, yeah. You know, on a much, much less, on a much less like physical level, but on a much more experiential level, the way that your personalities come together is really going to, you know, affect how good that sex is.
Yeah. Well, you bring up an interesting point talking about experiences and experiential stuff. In my experience, almost across the board, providing an experience is better than almost anything you could give someone, like as a gift. For a perfect example, Valentine's Day, a day I'm not really that much of a fan of, just because it's almost like a tax on guys for the most part. But like, if you were going to give your girlfriend or wife a gift, typically, you know, guys get jewelry and stuff like that, and, you know, the wives, and they're comparing and contrasting who got what and these type of things. But almost to the T, the woman that wins that conversation is the one that went on some sort of trip. So they had some sort of experience or had some sort of thing that happened, like, you know, carriage rides or this or that. It's not just, oh, I got $10,000 diamond earrings. You know, those diamond earrings get beat every time by an experience.
Exactly. Well, Because the diamond earrings are a transaction. Right. I mean, it's, you know, that it plain and simple, it's just a transaction. But the experience is like, wow, he went out of his way. We spent time together. We, you know, we had, you know, quality, you know, moments. He looked into my eyes. He told me he loved me. I mean, nothing wrong with diamond earrings, but, you know, but it's, again, it's sort of, you know, it's kind of like the parent who buys their kid a video game rather than taking them to the arcade, right. You know, and standing there and like playing Street Fighter, you know, next to the kid, even if the parent sucks, you know, it's just one of those things where when it comes to real relationships, I mean, hell, relationships are about spending time with each other and just enjoying the presence of each other's company. And yeah, I mean, so that you're totally dead on in that stuff. And, you know, you can do a lot of that in the dating phase. I mean, if you want, I can tell you like my favorite second date to take a girl on. Would you?
Yeah, let's do that.
Right. Oh, like. You know what I like to do, and this is right along with those experiences. Okay, so I live in New York, and there's a bar called the Oak Room, and the Oak, what is it called, the Oak Tavern or something. It's at the Plaza, and it's like real swanky. So you know, it's like wooden walls, and you know, like uppity waiters and all that. And on Wednesday night, they've got a three-piece jazz trio. Mm-hmm. Three-piece and jazz trio are somewhat redundant, but jazz trio, and it's kind of like, you know, swing jazz, like imagine, you know, something you'd see at a speakeasy in the 20s. So, you know, I'll usually start the date there, and I'll tell the girl, hey, you know, wear something nice. And by the way, if I'm getting a sense that a girl's down to stop by my place first, then there's this little thing that I do, and I've got a video where, you know, you guys can learn this technique, and you should, but we can talk about that later. Whether we meet from my place or whether we meet up there, you know, so we'll meet up at this real fancy place, and I tell her, hey, like, look real nice, you know, we're going to a swanky place. So we usually meet there around like 9 o'clock for a drink. That's when the set starts. 8:45, because that's when the set starts. And I've told her also, I've been like, you know, I'll say like, I got dinner plans tonight. They're like, I've got a working dinner. So she knows to get dinner. Like when we're texting back and forth, I'm like, you know, I got a working dinner tonight, but I'm gonna rush home, you know, throw on my take a quick shower and then meet you there around 8:45. So the dinner thing is handled. We show up, we have a drink, probably two drinks there, and just enjoying the jazz, you know, to each other, smiles, flirting, all that. And then what we do is we leave and we get in a taxi and we head downtown to this dive bar called Ace Bar. Mm-hmm. And Ace, I don't know if it still exists because I've been in a relationship for the last. Yeah. It's just this total piece of shit bar in East Village. You know, you feel like you're going to get mugged walking in there, which won't happen. But you know, it's just a piece of shit bar. But they've got like great beer and they've got a skee ball table at the back. So you know, as a substitute for that, you could go to like Dave and Buster's sort of place. You know, that I've done that too. Take a girl to Dave and Buster's instead of Ace Bar, but yeah, you basically take her somewhere that's like where you're totally out of place, where you know you're totally overdressed, and you know it's just all about having fun and being casual, like loosening the tie up a little bit. And playing some skee ball. And, you know, this is a great time to go for that kiss because, you know, now when you're playing skee ball, you can make bets, you know, about like, oh, you know, I bet if, you know, if you win, you owe me a kiss on the cheek and you know, vice versa. So, you know, that's, to me, that's like a great second date because it's got these two very different experiences. It's probably something that most guys haven't, you know, done with her. They're either taking her to dinner and a movie, or they're just taking her out to one bar, or, you know, like when she goes to the other thing about this that's really interesting is when she goes to at the Oak Room, it's like oh, like it's all swanky, and you know, he thinks he's gonna impress me with his money, and then, you know, you take her to Ace Bar, this little hole in the wall, and it's all about having fun, and you show this other side of your personality, hitting that and switch. You know, it's like, okay, like I know how to put on a good evening and I know how to be classy, but I also know how to get down and have fun. And, you know, and it just becomes a great time. And she knows that she can, every woman has a fantasy of dressing up and being a princess, but they also don't want that 24/7. Most of them want to be able to let loose, chill out, and just, you know, be real around a guy. And this date accomplishes both of those things. It's so much fun. It's got movement in it, which is really important. It's just a great experiential second date that most guys aren't going to take her on.
Yeah, it sounds like Titanic. You remember, like, you're watching that movie and the girl Rose. I mean, she's around all the hoity-toity people, but what does she really want to do? She wants to get down and dirty in the galleys with all the other guys, drinking beer and swallowing, you know, and just having a good time and letting loose. So,
girls, man. I mean, I found every now and then you get a girl who's a little bit, you know, classier, if we want to put it in a charitable way. And you know, there's other things you could substitute for the second part of that. I mean, like, there's a Brazilian jazz bar here that I'll sometimes take people to, and it's a little grungy, but it's like a little classier because you're like dancing, you know, your little Brazilian jazz dance. But the point is, yeah, you're giving girls that varied experience, and you know, they get to walk away from it saying, wow, like, I just had the most fun date last night. Like, it was crazy. Like, we it was classy. It was shitty. We played skee ball, listened to jazz. You know, and you don't have to follow that date formula exactly, but again, the fact that you don't have to go to the Oak Room, but yeah. The point is you're kind of mixing up the experiences, and she just walks away with like, wow, what a great story, and how much fun was that?
Yeah, you know, you brought up an interesting thing I have not thought about in a long time, but I had a buddy of mine back when we were traveling and, you know, doing consulting for clubs and promotions and stuff like that, and this guy, I mean, he had a way with women that was just hilarious to me. He was nothing to look at. He was just a goofball. But this guy saw more titties than I've ever seen in my life. And in fact, for 8 nights in a row, he saw a different girl's set. And how he did it was just like what you were talking about. He would just make bets. He was making bets with all these women, just in bars and stuff like that, just harmless bets. And they would do it. Every single time. I mean, in the bar, in front of everybody. I mean, this wasn't like just people that we knew. It would be people we just met. And it was hilarious. And everybody's having a good time, and everybody gets wrapped up into that moment, and he's giving them a hard time because they lost and all this stuff. And, you know, it was working, and it was working well. I mean, he was, more often than not, he was not going home alone. And so you just talking about that and the bet with the kiss and stuff, I've seen that work. Yeah. With somebody who, how do I say this nicely, had no business getting the type of results he was getting. How about that?
Well, you know, girls love to be challenged. I mean, I think a lot of guys overlook that and they don't think it, and you know, they're so afraid of asserting themselves that they just kind of, you know, hold back on that. But girls absolutely love to be challenged, and you know, so it's. Yeah, that betting stuff just works.
Well, yeah, I find that giving her an excuse to do what she really wants to do helps. You know what I mean? Like, she really, most women really want to let go, but they just need the okay to do that. And so, like a bet, you know, she lost. Everybody knows it, and so she can blame it on losing the bet, but yeah, she really kind of wanted to do it anyway. So.
Exactly. And you know what? It's so funny. Before we started recording this, we were talking about, things that get us as men into trouble. And, you know, half the time it's like, if you get into trouble, it's something you wanted to do anyway,
yeah,
and just needed somebody to push you into it. And you talk about human desire. This is a desire that both men and women have. It's like, you know, people like being, people like it when there's a great funstigation, you know, or funstigator, right? And, right. And you know, people love it when you're the person who's instigating fun and who's instigating a little bit of trouble. And there's an artful way to do it. I mean, again, when you're creating a dating experience, like we talked about, I mean, it's kind of natural to push somebody a little bit further, and they're having fun. And, you know, I usually don't sleep with the girl that night. I mean, I'll still let it roll, but, you know, it's, if you do that funstigation, man, that works like it's great. And yeah, the bets, I mean, you know, there's so much you can do. Where do you want to go from here?
Well, you know, it's funny. Let's talk about really quickly why you don't sleep with her on the first date. I think because I think that's important. I think that has to do with desire and how she feels afterwards, and you know, buyer's remorse to a degree, but
yeah, it's very, very simple. Very simple. You know, there's kind of this attitude amongst people: sleep with the girl when as soon as possible, right? And I think most guys, if you said to somebody, hey, like, I'm going to give you something that's going to let you sleep with the girl as soon as possible, I think most guys would take you up on that, because, you know, it's like that's an end point that a lot of guys like to reach. My perspective on is sleep with the girl when she wants it most.
Right.
That's the big win is, you know, get to the point where she not just is not putting up resistance, but where she's like chomping at the bit to have you inside of her, to be a little crude.
Yeah.
You know, because that's going to be the place where, again, where you're in control and where you're one step ahead. And if you know how to get to that place, if you know how to lead her there, you know, and a lot of guys don't, unfortunately, but if you know how to lead her there, then, you know, it's sex is not something that is met with a resistance. It's not something that is troublesome. It's not something that, you know, she has to feel bad about. It's like a total release. And besides the fact that it's just an awesome experience to have sex under those circumstances with a girl, because she can be pretty crazy.
Right.
Oh, it's also, I think it's morally, it's a little bit better to do than to, it's a lot better to do than to push for it, you know, when you want it most. And, you know, and it's just, when it comes to, again, turning a girl into a girlfriend, you know, I think in most guys I've talked to feel the same way. It's like, if you push for sex really soon, you might get your sex, but, you know, she maybe feels like a slut, or she, you know, she can say like, oh my God, I never do that. And you can actually cause her to pull away. And I'm not saying it can't work. I mean, one of my friends, she's married to a guy who she slept with the first night she met him. But again, in terms of, look, if you're single and you're listening to this, you know, and you're looking to land a great girl, the question is, you know, do you want something that's, you know, that's maybe going to work, or do you want something that, you know, works every time?
Right.
And as I started, I mean, listen, I live in New York. I was in my late 20s when I started doing this. So, you know, dating a lot of girls, and it's like, I want something that works every time. I don't want to leave it up to chance. I don't want to risk things. I want to, you know, sort of depend on a system that works. Let's take a crude metaphor. You know, you know a little bit about stock trading. It's like, you know, what's the win? Is it investing in one stock and, you know, in another stock and a third stock that are all kind of risky? Or is it investing in, you know, an index fund that just matches the S&P and, you know, having like a long-term investment strategy? It's not the best metaphor, but it's like, there's one that is proven to work, and there's one that may work, you know, if you're a really good investor, but most people don't beat the market. So, you know,
even pro investors don't. I was reading something about that the other day, that almost there aren't many that consistently year over year over year beat the market. They get lucky one year, basically.
Fooled by randomness.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you know, I just getting back to that whole having sex on the first date thing. I mean, you know, listen, there have been a few times when I've been on first dates, and you know, I'll kind of use this technique I talk about in that video, and you know, the girl comes over, and that's what she's up for. And crazily enough, you know, those girls sometimes that it's like, man, like I've had sex on the first date with a few girls. We've never even left my house, and you know, they're like, man, I'm so glad you get it. And I'm like, oh, thanks. You know, and the first time a girl said that to me, or, you know, variations on that. And the first time she said that to me, I was like, get what? And she was like, you know, like, honestly, like, I don't want a boyfriend right now. I just want to fuck. So, yeah. You know, it's like, oh, Cool. All right. Well, that's where we are. But you know, again, if you kind of screen those girls out, and if you watch this technique, you'll learn how. You know, then you're dealing with usually about 80% of the rest of the population who's not like that, and who, you know, wants to be courted in a way that makes them feel like a lady, and makes them feel respected, and you know, makes them willing to go to the next step. So that's, you know, that's where this all came from. And it's like, if you got something that works every time, even if it requires a short-term sacrifice, because look, there were times when I absolutely pushed way too hard to try to get a girl like back up to my apartment. You know, we'd been in the taxi, we'd be making out, the heat was on, and it was like feeling real good. And I was just like real pushy to get them back to the apartment. Like, you know, come on, like, well, it'll be fun. Like, no. Not gonna let you sleep with me. Like, we'll just, you know, just like everything I could do to try to get laid. And it just backfired on me so many times. It wasn't 100% strategy. And you know, so I came up with one that, you know, just always works every time. It's based on, you know, what it's based on the way she wants to be seduced, not the way you want to seduce her. And you know, so that's the big win to me.
Yeah, with the difference between push and permission is huge. I mean, you can just think about it this way. Like, when anybody's listening has walked into a clothing store, any store at all, and as soon as you walk in, you know, when somebody says, hey, can I help you? Right off the bat, you feel like you're being pushed into something almost every single time. You're like, no, I'm just looking, or something like that. Rather than, you know, if you've been in there a while and you're looking around, and then they come up later after noticing you've been there 10 minutes, come up later and say, hey, you know, did you need some help with something? You're like, yeah, you know, I'm looking for this, this, and this. Totally different in that approach. And I think most people, when they feel pushed in their head, and I know I do, I automatically think something's wrong. There's a reason this person's pushing. There's something hidden here. There's something that I'm missing, and I need to back up and try to figure out what this thing is. Versus, you know, when you figure out ways just to give permission, you know, you're looking. It's a totally different story, because you're just allowing that person to do what they really wanted to do anyway, and it's much more powerful. And you're just more the enabler, which is a very, very powerful place to be, because a lot of people don't have the ability to do the things they want to do because they're afraid to. And so if you can enable them to do what they want to do, that's a position in their head that you have and can go a long way. I mean, that's why a lot of guys, including myself, I mean, if you've had, you know, one night stands or women that you've talked to in the past, that's why they still keep in touch with you, because you have that position in their head that, you know, it's not a judgment thing. You just gave them permission to do what they wanted to do. The one thing, and then we'll get back to what you were talking about that you kind of reminded me of, was, you know, the old kind of the thing that women say to each other is like, if men are like tile, if you lay them right the first time, you can walk all over them for the rest of your life. Actually, I think if I were going to make that crude analogy, I would say the flip side is actually more true. Where just what you were talking about, where allowing her to enjoy that slow tease period, and when she's really on top of it and really ready to go, that's the point where it happens. That's way more powerful. Yeah.
And listen, I mean, relationships are absolutely 100% built on trust. I mean, you cannot, as we were talking about before we got on here, you cannot have a good relationship where people don't trust you. And, you know, So this system, and the way we talked about it, and the way you move towards sex, is a way that moves towards sex in a way that builds trust. It's like, listen, I'm not going to push you to do anything that you're not comfortable doing. I'm going to, you know, wait till you're good and ready, and then we're going to do it. But it builds so much more trust when you do it that way. And that's a great springboard into this phase of intimacy where you're sleeping together and building, you know, that trusting, fun relationship. So, again, I mean, I know there are people, and, you know, I spent a long time, you know, looking into all this stuff, the whole, you know, all this pickup artist stuff. And, you know, these guys, their goal is like condense the seduction process into as quick a time frame as possible. And, you know, listen, that it can work. I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't. Like, you go out to a nightclub, there are girls who are just down to have fun and down to party, and they are that's going to work on some of them. But, you know, for a guy who wants who doesn't want that? And you know, there's a lot to recommend that. I mean, that's fun stuff. But you kind of go through it and you realize those girls are not the girls who you want to be in relationships with. The reason that they hopped into bed with, you know, for the exact reason they hopped into bed with you for the first night, for the exact reason they were dressed like, you know, a slut when you met them, those girls are usually not the girls who you want to be in a relationship with. So, you know, if you're, you know, don't play that kind of fool's game, you know, play a game that you can control and that works for you and that builds trust, you know, mutually.
Well, you can't be naive and assume that you're the only smooth guy out there and that you're the only one that she's doing this with. And I think that's the trap a lot of guys get in, is when, you know, they get into one night stands as the goal and they start having one night stands or sleeping with married women and that type of thing, which is actually surprisingly easier than sleeping with single women. You start getting wrapped up in your own kind of ego and your own self. But, you know, what you don't realize is that you're not the only one. I mean, you're not the only smooth guy that's talking to her and hanging out with her. I mean, she basically chose you because you kind of fit a certain mold. And it was good enough.
Right.
You know what I mean? And in fact, that's actually, when you think about it that way, it's almost like you're being used to a degree, but at the same time, it's like you really weren't that great. You were just good enough. You were good enough for that moment.
Exactly. And, you know, that's not something to build an identity or an ego on. So I just think for, you know, and hey, that is a part of female desire, going out and, you know, kind of being that. And this is something that you have to allow for, too, is you have to allow for her to feel like she's winning you over. It's such a great feeling for a girl. You know, one of the things that we learn about with these literotica novels and these romance novels is what usually the impression. Right. So when the guy makes the impression on the girl and vice versa, she has the distinct impression that she doesn't really have a chance with him.
Right.
And this is obviously a fine line to walk, right? Because you have to indicate your interest enough to take a phone number and to get along with her and to build rapport with her. But at the same time, she has to feel kind of like she has to win you over. And again, it's really not that hard, believe it or not. It's a lot easier than guys think, but you know, but again, you gotta, if you can do it like that, oh man, what a powerful impression. And then throughout the rest of it, you allow it to be a two-way seduction. She is working on seducing you. And you know, in these books, you know, what you find is that the woman, there's a part of her that is, it's like she's insanely desirable. Like he can't help himself. In fact, some of the literotica stuff that gets, there's some pretty dark stuff like about rape and whatnot, you know. But you know, I don't want to make much commentary on that, you know, part of female desire. But what I will say is that, you know, there's this very dark part of the female mind. Wants to be desired so badly by a man that he literally cannot help himself, and he has to have her. And
but the right man has to do that. It can't be like a sketchy, crazy construction worker whistle, that type of thing.
Construction worker who's whistling after her. It's a man who, you know, it's like it's like he's powerful. He doesn't need her. He absolutely doesn't need her, but he can't resist her. She's totally irresistible. And, you know, to have a system and to be able to sort of make her feel like she's winning you over and that you just can't resist her is really powerful. And what's crazy is when you're able to kind of orchestrate all this and you know what's going down, and you're like, I know this is how I'm playing it. And she's just kind of like, she just feels like, you know, okay, like I'm winning him over. And you know, but again, you got to be careful with this, right? This is, if you push too hard too soon, then it's like, oh, well, that was too easy. You know, like he gave it up too easy. Like this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah. How funny is that? How fun. Think about what you just said. How funny is that? He gave it up too easy. That's usually the other way around, right?
he was too easy. This was, yeah, it was too, it was, he gave it up. He gave up his interest. I know what's up. And so in that way, it just kind of becomes boring for her and it becomes predictable. And this is where, you know, a lot of rich guys totally screwed up. This is why, you know, listen, I was, when I sort of discovered the system, I had a house that was, that was underwater on its mortgage. I had like $50,000 to $60,000 in debt, and I was not in the best shape of my life at all. I was, in fact, it was probably the worst shape of my life. And the girl who I started dating was a girl who, I mean, you've seen this girl's picture, Brad. She was an FHM cover model, and she was just banging hot. I mean, like, you know, lust worthy. And, you know, the thing that I did that a lot of other guys did not is, like, you know, all these other guys were taking her out and trying to shower her with, you know, with these experiences and just kind of, you know, go for the sex and all this, and just being very, what I would say, shallow in their approaches. And it was not necessarily a shallowness of personality, but just, you know, uncreative and like boring and predictable. And thing that I did that none of these other guys were doing is I, you know, allowed it to play out a little bit. I you know, made an impression that was really powerful. I remember hearing from her the next day after I met her, and she was just like, she specifically said in the email, like, so, you know, so who the fuck are you? And it's kind of in this challenging way. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. You know, and then just kind of progressed from there. But despite all these disadvantages that I had and all these things that I couldn't, you know, do for her that these other guys were doing, you know, she still, it was like I activated this feeling inside of her. I made her feel like this, like, okay, this guy is different. This is adventurous. He's not pursuing me the way every other guy is. And that's what's, you know, craziest about this. Again, I mean, I'm not saying this to brag or anything, but listen, man, you've seen my girlfriends. They are all like, I mean, I don't want to speak for myself, but
they're all good looking. Let's just leave it at that. They're good. They look good.
So, you know, and what's really crazy is this stuff works so well on the best looking girls, because it's like, you know, they're so used to guys like just throwing money at them and trying to, you know, flatter them and whatnot, that when you're different and when you're able to tune into, you know, sort of a different level, man, it's so powerful for them.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. I mean, to me, and if I'm teasing this out right, what it sounds like is that, you know, all of these other guys were basically trying to get intimate with her vagina, and you were actually trying to get intimate with her as a person and who she was and some of these things. And that's probably how she takes it.
That is absolutely how she takes it. You couldn't have said it better yourself, I couldn't have said it better myself, I should say.
Yeah, but what people don't know is that we're the same person. I'm just making, you know.
it's so unbelievably awesome and easy and amazing once you get this sorted out and once you get it resolved. So, I just you know, again, I love it, and I think it's so much fun, and it's so great to know this stuff now. I mean, you know, we've talked about this. Like, I was pretty down and out in my mid-20s and really struggling with girls, and, you know, even when I was in that whole pickup artist scene, man, I thought I understand women, but really I was just listening to these guys who were like, you know, it was all about male egos trying to prove to each other, like, that they were the shit, and it wasn't about actually, you know, like, loving the woman or you know, building intimacy with the woman. And that's, you know, when it comes down to it, that's what she wants. Like, I always talk about how so there's two sides of the same coin of intimacy. One of them is sexuality, and the other one's tenderness. I'll touch on this real briefly. It's like, you know, intimacy is basically romantic closeness. I mean, I'm sure there's a better definition of it, but, you know, intimacy is basically being close to a person, at least with males and females, in a pretty romantic way, and you know, not really. It's like you're vulnerable, you're naked, you're intimate with them.
Right.
And two sides of that are sexual intimacy and just tenderness. And sexual intimacy to me is kind of a drive. It's like when a man is able to, you know, he's able to push forward and break through, and, you know, there's a very there's a physiological metaphor here of the penis kind of breaking through the vagina and entering her and all that. And so that's sort of the sexual element of intimacy. There's also this other element, which is tenderness. and in the safety of intimacy. It's like it's after sex. It's after you've broken through. It's when she's laying in your arms and she's cuddling with you and she just, you know, feels safe. And, you know, those are, again, I think when a guy hears the word tenderness, he's like, ah, well, that just sounds like some pussy shit. Yeah. You know, but it's actually requires incredible strength to, you know, be that guy for a woman, to not run away, to not leave her, and to not be, to me, the wimpy aspect of tenderness is where, like, you know, you're like, when you're sort of needy, you know, there's like a neediness that some guys allow themselves to feel when they've gotten close to a girl. But tenderness to me is like, you're strong for her, and she's able to feel safe with you in the most private place in the world. And she feels like she can be the person who she is, without any reservation, you know, totally naked, you know, with you. And so, you know, being able to demonstrate that you can be both of those things for her. Again, this all sounds very complicated, you know, and it sounds like there's all these things that we got to do, but it's really easy when you just kind of, you know, follow. I don't mean to keep coming back to that, but, you know, when you just kind of follow the system, it all, you know, just plays out. But you know, again, guys don't think about this stuff. They're just thinking about sex, and so they don't think about tenderness. You know, or sometimes they're, you know, you get these guys who are way too tender, and they're not nearly sexual enough, and so the woman doesn't, she doesn't get turned on. She doesn't like trust in the guy's, you know, sexual strength.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. You know, one thing that you touched on as far as intimacy, that I don't think a lot of guys understand is actually revealing something of yourself to her that no one else knows. And when I say that, typically a lot of guys, when they have problems in their life or issues or things like that, everybody knows because they've told every single person. And then when they tell their woman that the same stuff, it's nothing special. It's like, he's just running his mouth again. And that's really not attractive at all or admirable. But when you've got issues and things like that, and you feel comfortable enough talking to her about it and letting her know what's on your mind and what's bothering you and things like that, and she knows that, you know, she's the only person that you're confiding in with this stuff, there's something really powerful about that. There's an intimacy there that draws you closer together. She knows that you have strength, but, you know, you can lean on her to bounce some things off of her and that type of stuff. So it's really strong. So that kind of ties into intimacy that may make a little more sense to him.
Absolutely, and I'm really glad you brought that up. I'll share with you guys a great way to do that. Because I think that sounds kind of conceptual. Unless you've got a good example, like one thing that I like to do is I like to talk to a woman about my dreams, right? Yes. And I like to say, like, it's not therapy hour, right? Your goal is not to like sit there with her and like, you know, spill your guts about, you know, how difficult life was for you in middle school, at least not the first time. But you know, it's like I like to tell a girl about my dreams and then my fears of achieving them. You know, it's like, and that to me is like something that I can really open up on, and I'm not going to tell, you know, a lot of the world. Now, along those lines, I did want to share something interesting here. One of the things that I think is very powerful in the impression stage of talking with a girl, and this is, you know, listen, you can get her number in a minute and a half, but you can also get in 30 minutes. And I think a 30-minute conversation is great. One of the things that is very powerful when you're talking to a girl is to tell her something that is pretty revealing about yourself that I would say the ordinary person wouldn't feel comfortable sharing with her. But every time I do this, girls are like, wow, like, you know, I can't believe you feel comfortable sharing that with me. Like it has the twin effect of making them feel, and I'd like to think that I am very real. Like, and I'm not putting up any pretense. I'm not trying to hide anything or impress them. And also feeling like, wow, this guy can really open up to me. That's really attractive. But at the same time, now listen, you got to balance this out. Being unattached, right? Like this is, so we talked about being that guy who, like, you know, a woman can be really engaged with, but also, like, you know, feel like, oh, he doesn't need me, right? And if you can be that guy who she doesn't need at the same time that she really wants, that's so powerful. So I'll give you an example. I you know this. A few years ago, I did this hallucinogen called ayahuasca, and man, it was just an incredible spiritual experience. I won't go into it here, but you know, I experienced my birth, my death. I saw God, whatever that means, and it was so. So intense, to the point where it was life changing. And this is a story that I will often tell a girl within, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of meeting her, which seems a little odd when you first think about it, because A, you know, drugs, like it should be a taboo subject, and B, you know, it's pretty deep and it's pretty revealing. I talk about like my birth and my death. But what this story does is it really opens me up to a girl, right? So it really lets her see, wow, this guy is not trying to hide things from me. It also screens out girls who just, like, I do have a side of myself that's very exploratory of truth and faith and of the universe. And if they're, you know, going to shut me out for doing that, then I don't want to be with them anyway. You know, and again, it usually raises an eyebrow to the point where people are like, are you being real right now? And I'm like, yeah, like this is me. Like, listen, I'm enjoying talking to you and I'm enjoying getting to know you. And, you know, but I don't like to hold anything back. I don't like to hide who I am. And this is a really defining moment in my life. I mean, we can talk about how I used to race cars, or we can talk about, you know, all the travel I love to do. But, you know, to me, that's just, those are interests. This is, you know, finding the truth of the universe is that's really me. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but there is this vulnerability and this realness being expressed in this first conversation that most girls are not going to have with the guy. And once they get past that raised eyebrow, once they get past like the whole, like, is he being real? There's this kind of click in their head where they're like, holy shit. Like, guys do not talk to me about this sort of stuff. There is something about this guy that I have to get to know further. Like, I have to. And and by being vulnerable like that, and by revealing something about yourself that, you know, in that way, we've all got those things. We've all got those stories. It just really sets the stage for her to want to know more about you. You know, it builds a tremendous amount of intrigue. It sets the stage for her to start to want to work for you and prove that she can be that way too. Mm-hmm. It just does so many things right, and and it shows that you can be. I mean, tender is sort of the word here, but it certainly shows you can be vulnerable. And you know, that whether you're talking to, you know, your best friend or a beauty queen, it doesn't really matter. You're still just being real, and you're still being yourself.
Yeah, I mean, what you're doing is you're basically putting out something that is potentially damaging, but at the same time. Gives an insight into what your drives, motivations, and overall mission in life is for that type of thing, and which is, you know, there are many things that are more attractive to a woman than mission in life, I've found. The other thing that's really interesting is that kind of the subtext, you know, when you check out some of the literatica and even some of the romance novels, it almost seems like that the subtext is that, yeah, it's a woman that is there, and the guy is, you know, of course, just unable to control himself. But the kind of the subtext below that is that there's this man of strength, and she has to save himself from himself.
Absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is, it's not about being an alpha male man of strength. I think the guys really confuse that. You know, it's this guy who doesn't need anyone and, you know, fuck the world and, you know, and all this. That's not what it's all about. It's not being, you know, this guy who dominates over other people. It's just a man. When I think of a man of strength, I think of it this way. It's a man who, what he's got going on in his life and the person he is someone who, you know, is not going to be swayed by other people. He's got his own thing. He's got his own truths that he's looking for. And he kind of wants to, the best way I can phrase it is like, you know, listen, I'm on this path and I'm moving down the path, and get the fuck out of my way. Because if you're not coming with me, then I'm going to, you know, roll right over you. And that sounds a little violent, but, you know, the point is, you don't have to be like a dominant alpha male to live your life that way, right? Like, you don't have to you know, be a guy who's a, you know, 6'6" gorilla. I think, again, guys get a visual image of what an alpha male is, which is like, you know, some massive dude who just, you know, freaks everybody out and is totally in control of a room. You know, what women are really looking for when it comes to strength is not that. It's a man who's just true to himself and strong for himself before he's strong for anyone else. And, you know, and moving in his own direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, I guess to kind of close it out, it's more or less just... Again, it's that strength. It's that he's living by his own truths that aren't easily swayed. But it, you know, if compelled or new evidence comes across, of course those truths can change. But he's not wishy-washy at all. He's not doing things just to make or appease other people. He's doing this because this is his drive, his mission, and how he thinks that things should be for himself, which is pretty awesome. So, anything you want to close out on really quickly?
No, man. I mean, listen, we talked about a lot of stuff today. We started off by talking about female desire. We talked about dating. We talked about drugs. We talked about alpha males.
Yeah, we have.
Fantastic. And, you know, I love talking about this stuff, but, you know, when it all comes down to it, as much as I love talking about it, what I really love is when I'm able to spend, you know, quality time with an absolutely incredible girl. I mean, that's what I want. You know, I know it's some guys don't want that. They want to, you know, just go out and play and be bachelors, and you know that's cool too. You know, I've got a lot of things to say to those guys because I've lived that life for many years. But you know, I think that there's a lot of guys who are like, shit, you know, like I want to get. Yeah, it was really interesting, Brad. Like, cause, you know, so we released this product not long ago about how to get a girlfriend, and I was very worried when I put it out because so much of what I see on the internet is about how to get laid and, you know, how to, you know, have one night stands and stuff. And that's, you know, what guys talk about in men's magazines and all that. So the question was like, okay, do people, you know, if I put this program out about how to get a girlfriend, are people going to actually want that? Because I know that's what I wanted, but is that what other guys want, or am I just, you know, an unbelievably big wuss? And, you know, and it turns out that it's you know, it's done very well, and we don't have a lot of copies left right now, but you know, it really blew me away how many people were like, whoa, like this is something that I absolutely want to get on. So I know I'm not alone in that, and you know, and again, I just love, I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, wanting amazingly quality, you know, intimate time with one other human being who you're absolutely enamored with. And, you know, so if that's where a guy is in his life, then I definitely got a lot to say to him too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as weird as it sounds, I mean, I had to actually lose respect for the one night stand in order to kind of respect women more. And respect my relationships more and those types of things and to actually progress into something a little bit more, because it can kind of take you to a dark place a lot of times. So, you know, I guess I'll just kind of leave with that. The product you're talking about is your girlfriend activation system. It's awesome. To be quite honest, more of our guys have purchased this system than any other thing that has been we've kind of promoted. I've got nothing but great feedback from it. As you can tell, Christian and I, we're kind of two peas in the same pod. He dresses a little bit better than I do. I'm probably bigger than he is, but other than that, we think a lot alike. And so, I mean, if you want to check that out, just go to highgravitymail.com/GFS girlfriend activation system. So just GFS, that'll be easy. I'll just shorten it for you, and you can check that out. Is there anything you want to make a comment on that really quickly before we sign off?
And maybe make it highgravitymail.com/girlfriend, but whatever works for you, man. Whatever guys are going to remember. I always abbreviate it by GFAS, but GFS works too. Whatever.
Yeah, we'll just do girlfriend. That'd be easiest. Yeah, so highgravitymail.com/girlfriend. That's easy. So we'll go that direction. And any closing remarks?
Really enjoyed our conversation, just like always, and you know, looking forward to the next time it happens, guys. You know, if you want more, again, at that website down there, you can learn kind of how I discovered all of this stuff, and it is really interesting. I mean, because I've been through the ringer, man. I've been like I've had my heart just absolutely freaking ripped out by some girls. You know, I tried doing that pickup artist thing for a few years, and that just didn't work. And then I, you know, kind of stumbled into all this, and that's when it was like, okay, like this is really who I am. Like this is, you know, this is what I wanted this whole time. I didn't want to go around banging a lot of girls. I just want a great girl, you know. And so, you know, if that's kind of where your head is at, then yeah, come on over and we'll tell you a little bit more.
Yeah, and if you've already got a woman who's special and things like that, I mean, to be quite honest, this can work for you too. Actually, a lot of guys that picked it up are married, and I've gotten feedback off that too. So it gives a good insight into female desire, which is really important. I mean, if you know what she kind of wants, and it makes your life a lot easier, to be quite honest. And it's not hard, it's not difficult. It's just a matter of kind of flipping the way your perspective on things, which is always a good thing to do. So that's about it, man.
I don't know if I'm talking over you, if you can hear me when I'm talking, but there's been a few times when, like, you're talking and I'm talking, and I'm like, I'm guessing he can't hear me right now. But I was just going to make a comment on that last point. You know, on this notion of being married and whatnot, I mean, I will say this too. You know, in the course, we talk all about, like, some very simple stuff, which is, what is it that makes women so addicted to literotica and the men in them? And I think whether you're single, whether you're in a relationship, whether you don't even want to be in a relationship right now, it's just very valuable information to have. So yeah, just to reiterate what you said, I appreciate you, you know, reminding me to remind everyone else of that. So, yeah, again, I'd love to have you guys over there. And again, Brad, thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, not a problem at all. All right, guys, so that's another podcast wrapped up. So for Christian Hudson, I am Brad Howard, and that's your High Gravity Mail Podcast.